And welcome everyone at the Mega Giant BBS Radio. This is Adventures into Sovereignty. I am your host, Andrew Bartis. I'm joined by my intrepid co-host, Rebecca Cope, and the intrepid Rod Class, the senior supervisor of all administrative court. We are continuing from our live event here at the Rod Class event in North Carolina. Welcome, Rebecca. Welcome, Rod, back to this continuing live broadcast. We have had some absolutely amazing conversations, testimony, everything that you can think of. But right now, we're going to continue our conversation. For those that listened the last week and the week before, we talked about the War Powers Act. We talked about what is going on with the corrupt courts. Now we're talking about how to get enforcement action and why we are actually here at the event to understand how the War Powers Act is affecting us and why we are looking for international enforcement so we can create a tribunal of international justice. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, Rod, let's talk to tribunal and how we get enforcement power for a private attorney general with multiple marquees of?
Marquees of reprisals.
Marquees of reprisals.
What this is, ladies and gentlemen, is that Congress gave us, the people, the authority to be act as private attorney generals and constitutional bounty hunters for responsibilities on their side of the fence. Throughout the years, it was done on a challenge. Mm-hmm. They bet me that I could not get a letter of marquee reprisal signed by the United States Congress.
Boy, they ought to know better than that.
Because some of the people have tried. And they bet me that I could not do it. Well, my brother and I and another gentleman, we went down to Washington, D.C. because the steelworkers was down there on a protest on a tariff argument. They want a tariff raised. And they didn't realize when they raised the tariff that they was going to forfeit their jobs on this issue. Well, Dwight tried to tell them, and they wouldn't pay attention. So anyhow, Dwight and I was down to Congress, and we created letter marquee reprisal in the name of the people with my signature on it. I'm the only one who could take it off, but we made it in the name of the people of the United States. So it is enforceable by any of us to come in and push it. For those of you who do not understand what a letter of marquee is and reprisal, this goes back to the 1600s. Mm-hmm. What this was is you had pirates out on the open seas. The merchants were being attacked by pirates. The king could not always send out the military, the navy, out to take down the pirates. So what they did is they gave the merchants letters of marquee for them to go solve their own problem. Well, the stipulation is that you can't take out unarmed civilians. You can only deal with the corruption of the pirates. Well, when we went into Washington, D.C.,
perfect,
we laid this out against the government and the court system.
Who are the pirates?
Which are the pirates and the public offices. Mm-hmm. We didn't put a time limit on this.
Forever.
It's permanent. So what we did is we went down and we filed this in Washington, D.C. We went down to Bob Ney's office. Well, they wanted us to leave a copy and they sent this thing back in the mail. I said, no. I want you to stamp it here. I'll leave you a copy. You guys, you've read it. Stamp it and we'll go on the next way. Well, I got a hold of my congressman that was living in Florida at the time, Adam Putman. I called his office from Bob Ney's office. And they said, well, Mr. Class, because this was over a traffic issue in Ohio. Of all the things, it was over a stupid traffic stop. Yes. But we dealt with corrupt court judges. I had a valid driver's license, and they wanted to bring charges against me for driving on an expired license that was expired for 20 years because I had a valid Florida license and they didn't want to accept it. So we escalated this up to the next level with the court system. So we went down to Washington, D.C. I got a hold of Adam Putman's office. I talked to the aide, and they said, well, Mr. Class, we can't get involved. I said, yes, you can. Yes, you will. Don't leave. I'll be there. So I ran over underneath the tunnel, over into Adam Putman's office. I got there, and lo and behold, I had 10 D.C. police officers waiting for me. I said, well, this is a good day.
Just 10.
So I looked at them and I said, well, I'm going to go for the door. So I did. And they sit down and says, would you please back up? I says, yeah. I said, you got any ID? I says, yeah, I have my briefcase with me. I laid my briefcase down. I pulled up my driver's license from Florida, shows that I was a Florida resident. They said, what are you doing here? So I'm here to talk to my Florida representative. I says, I got a problem here. So they called him out. I said, well, Mr. Klaus, I told you I can't get involved. I said, yes, you can, and yes, you will. He said, how do you figure? So I opened up my little briefcase. When I did, these 10 police officers just jumped back about 10, 15 foot, scared to death. I pulled out the worst thing that I could pull out. I pulled out a constitution.
Paper terrorists again.
Paper terrorists. I went into Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12. I said, Congress has the authority to grant letter marquees and reprisal. He says, yes, we do. I says, good. I went over to Article 3, Section 2. That dealt with the authority of the court and Congress that dealt with controversy. He says, we have absolute authority. I said, thank you. I handed them my letter marked King reprisals, and they stamped them, all 20 of them. I gave them two. He says, what do you want me to do with this? I says, you got 10 days to get me on the floor of Congress, or we can activate this within 10 days. It's okay. They never did call me. Problem of it is, they did not do it within 10 days, so they okayed us to inactivate the letter marked King reprisals against the public officials. So we're sitting on, at that time, one, but I had 20 copies. So I handed them out to the guys that bet me I couldn't do it. So I gave it back to them.
Did you put them under you like we're talking about doing?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
So now what happened here in 2007, a group of us went back down to the Judiciary Committee, went before John Conyers and Patrick Leahy. Well, while I was down there, I took the same letter Mark King reprisal. I took them into the Judiciary Committee on the House side, got their stamp and seal on it. I took it over to the Senate Judiciary Committee and got their stamp and seal on it. So now I got three stamps of Congress marking my letter Mark Keys and reprisal. So now I've got three congressional stamps.
Three. Congressional stamps.
Three congressional stamps.
That allows you to hunt pirates.
Yes.
Land or sea.
Land or sea.
Doesn't matter what law they are under.
This goes with the private attorney general and bounty hunter. And this is where the issue comes in.
Constitutional bounty hunter hunting corrupt judges, corrupt officials.
Yep.
And your purpose is to bring them to where?
Justice into the international court, to bring them in on an administrative claim.
International court.
And bring them up for administrative violations, which means before we go into the war crimes, we have to prove civil crimes, violations of administration on their side. Now, what does this mean? Well, what it means is when we go before the international judge, which is neutral,
an international judge.
Yep.
More than one.
We're going to ask the judge that we're dealing with, or the lawyer, or the prosecutor, which is the attorney. Mm-hmm. We're going to start asking them questions.
Why aren't they following the constitutional law in their court?
Well, that too. But we're going to get into, we want you to explain the jurisdiction of your court.
Yes.
Obviously, you're not putting
it. First question. What is the jurisdiction? What are we dealing with here?
What rules are you
Who
following
are you?
In your court? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Who is the plaintiff in this courtroom? Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of the legal code?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
A lot of questions we want to ask them.
We're going to be able to lay it all out. Now, the beauty of this is this. There's no such thing as a Fifth Amendment on their side of the fence.
With that said, there is no such thing as a Fifth Amendment. For all those people out there that are, this is going to be a little controversial, that are in SEAL Team 34, and they know who they're, and I know they don't know who I'm talking about. It does exist. You are now talking to a person as letter of marquees and reprisal. You are talking to a private attorney general with a tribunal court. So guys in 34, you have a choice. Stand up and be patriots or be costumed agents.
That's exactly right. Because what is the Fifth Amendment? The right to self-incrimination. You don't have to incriminate yourself. Excuse me, Judge. Are you telling this tribunal you refuse to answer the questions on the ground of self-incrimination?
In an administrative,
is that what I hear you sitting here taking the fifth on?
In an administrative tribunal, and they're going to say that.
Exactly right.
You hear that, guys, in SEAL Team 34? I'm talking direct to those guys that are in South Africa right now.
So what we're dealing with is they also cannot hire a lawyer in an administrative court. Well, I am entitled to Sixth Amendment counsel. No, sir, you are already have a legal degree as a judge or as a lawyer or as a prosecuting attorney. Why do you need to hire a mouthpiece to speak for you? If you can't speak for yourself, then you are admitting that you are incompetent.
And dishonorable.
Yes. And if you are incompetent, then you could have never brought a claim against any of the American people or anybody in any other country or in the military at this point. So because there's a lot of military being drugged into the civilian courts, being charged with no legal authority on their side of the civil actions here. See, these are the issues here. So what really does this mean? Under the rules of court, under the criminal procedure, under Rule 3 and Rule 4, it says there has to be a formal complaint with a sworn affidavit and a warrant for a police officer to work against us. This means that there had to be an injured party, that somebody went to the clerk of courts, raised her right hand, I do solemnly swear to tell the truth that I was injured by John Doe, at which point the judge would issue a warrant. Now, what makes the difference between me and the police officer? Okay, I want you guys to stop and think here for a minute. What is a bail bondsman? What does a bail bondsman do? A bail bondsman bonds a client who's been brought before a judge and guarantee that he's going to be there. What happens when that client jumps bail? He violates the bond, right? Mm-hmm. Who do they send after him?
The bondsman.
A bounty hunter. Why does a bounty hunter can kick in your door and don't need a warrant or a complaint on a bail bond violation? Because the rule said he's already been charged, he's under a bond, he violated a bond, they don't need the warrant. Now, every one of these judges have a bond. Every one of these lawyers have a bond. Every public official has a bond. Every one of them raised their right hand, says, I do solemnly swear, so help me God, I will protect. Every one of them committed perjury. Every one of them has violated the Constitution. Every one of them has violated the War Powers Act. And the reason why we're going under the War Powers Act, ladies and gentlemen, take the time to look it up, and it's on the internet. Look up statutes at large. You can download it. It's in 1917, under Volume 40. Get in, read Volume 40. Section 411, that is page 411. Read the War Powers Act. It's 16 pages long. It isn't very long. Once you understand their procedure, and why are we talking the War Powers Act here? Why are we talking the trade with the enemy side of this thing? Because in 1917, when we was in World War I, this was put out against Germany of trading. Now, this is where the licenses come in. This is where the registration comes in. For businesses, for corporations.
Who may still be doing business with the other enemies, because at that time the Model T was gone, our steel was going everywhere, our oil was going everywhere, everything was going everywhere, and it ended up in those countries. As much as in World War II, who supported Germans? Ford. Who supported the Germans? All of the American facilities were producing what? Equipment that went right there.
Exactly right. And this is why they created it. So they had to have licenses and registration in order to deal. So what happened in 1933 when they did the state of emergency here, or the Mandatory Act, or the Banking Act, whichever phrase you want to use here, but it was under Public Law 1, 48 Stat C1. Paragraph two is they amended the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 under 40C, under 411 on this. When they created this and amended it, they made the people, us, United States citizen, enemies of the state, requiring us to obtain licenses, registrations, because they took our gold, they took our silver, they made us enemies under the bankruptcy. And the purpose of this was to use our equity and our property, our body, our whatever we was putting out for energy, they were using it as a credit line. Yeah, so absolutely. We had to be licensed. This is where they're coming back in. Well, it's a privilege. Now, it isn't a privilege. What this was for them to use and securitize, because we wasn't dealing with gold. We were dealing with a credit line. The people were the credit line.
What they call the full faith and credit. We are referred to as the full faith and credit. You know, get that, folks. We are the full faith and credit.
Yes,
we
are.
For the war powers. Our energy has been conscripted for perpetual war. And who is the perpetual war now? It's against the people.
But it goes right back to the Bar Association. It goes right back into the judges. Or it goes right into the lawyers. Mm-hmm. And what we're sitting on in 1953... under the 73rd Congress, Congress declared the National Lawyers Guild to be a communist party in 1953. National Lawyers Guild. And what is the National Lawyers Guild? It is members of the Bar Association of the lawyers and the attorneys and the judges that belong to a communist party. This is where our problem is coming in, because the Bar Association has infiltrated every aspect of our livelihood. If you have any doubt, go down, talk to your local merchant, and the first thing he tells you, I got to talk to my lawyer. Go talk to your doctor. I need to go talk to my lawyer. Go talk to city council. I got to talk to the lawyer. Go talk to your congressman. I got to talk to my lawyer. Lawyers are in every aspect of everything we do. Nobody can make a decision unless the Bar Association decides what the decision is going to be. So they've got domination over this entire country. That's where our problem's coming in. What they did, they took a good thing, because under the Trading with the Enemy Act, when they inverted it over into the Mandatory Act of 1933, the Banking Act, whatever you want to call it, state of emergency, the understanding, this is why you got to read the Trading with the Enemy of 1917. The basis of this is that they were to discharge all of our debts upon using our credit.
They conscripted our property, and as a result of that conscription and setting us up so that we became the credit line, then what that did, according to Section 7, is just as easy to read in the War Powers Act as it can be, then what you are saying is that any time a debt came from the people because they were using all of our property, the benefit for us was that they had to pay our debts.
Exactly. But
and
see, what a lot of people don't understand is this, especially the military personnel, because I didn't understand it when I was in, but we've got an understanding of it now. Mm-hmm. Whenever we went into the military and we raised our right hand, we had to take one step forward. That one step forward walked us out of our enemy of the state citizenship into the federal corporation citizenship, made us U.S. citizens. Therefore, we're no longer considered enemies of the state, because now we're part of the corporation, and we didn't realize that at this time. So when we got discharged, we got taken back out of the corporation, put back into the enemy state side of this thing. And see, this is something that we wasn't aware of. And this is something that you guys need to be aware of. And this is the same thing with every public official. Every public official, the moment they take their oath of office, they were required to relinquish their national citizenship. It is in Title 8, USC Code, Section 1481. It talks about the political subdivisions. It talks about the military. It talks about civil service. The moment you swear that I do uphold, you relinquish voluntarily your national citizenship. You walk out of the enemy state site into the U.S. corporation site. And we didn't know that. This is why this is significant. This is why it's very significant. And what has been brought up here tonight, here this weekend, and I never gave it any thought, but when we out here as enemies of the state, when we walk into the court, we're using our first name, middle name, last name. Those of you in the military, stop and think.
Last name first.
Your last name is the first name because you're called by your last name. You're never called by your first. Always called by the last. Anything that you sign in the military is always last name, first name, middle name. They reversed it on the corporation side. And on the enemy state side, they reversed it back to first, middle, and last. Now, all this stuff is very significant. And as important as what it is, we still have that one problem. When you're considered of an enemy of the state, it doesn't matter how you spell your name. When you're an enemy, you can spell it inside out, backwards, upside down. You're still an enemy. They don't care how you spell it.
And as a result of being the enemy, then the important thing to understand here is that that gives them the right to steal all this conscripted property that's already been used for the war effort. Then because you're an enemy of the state, anything that belongs to you is now up for grabs. So here we've got our piracy, and here we've got the reason why you're bringing this back down to the bounty hunter side of it.
Okay,
quick, for any of the military guys out there that have got a DD-214 that have been discharged, I want you to look at your name, and I want you to look at your driver's license. This is the switch. You are registered with your driver's license as what? The enemy of the state. When you are in your military, what are you? Who's your oath to? Who's your oath to when you have a driver's license? Are you corporate or are you constitutional? We are looking for provost marshals. We are looking for generals retired that exist right now. Many have contacted, but we need one with balls, ovaries, or backbone. Bob. And I know they're out there that'll sit with international judges to begin to show the fraud at the administrative level.
And the purpose of the tribunal, let's get that real clear so that people understand that. The purpose of the tribunal is to allow us to begin to hold the judges and the prosecutors and the public officials accountable to the rule of law. So here we're talking about the bounty hunter side and the private attorney general. The bounty hunter is exactly set up to do the same thing. So everybody says, okay, we always have these problems. How are we going to solve our problems? Well, guess what? The Constitution gave us several ways that we'll be able to do this. The constitutional side being the bounty hunter and the private attorney general. Yep. For those of us who are willing to put the knowledge stage here and be able to say, yep, we understand this. We take it serious that in order to enjoy government of, by, and for the people, then we have this role that we are being asked to play. And right. As we go in and do the international tribunal, then we begin to hold them accountable.
All right, now the question comes up. Okay, you guys are talking about, well, the money, the script side. What you, ladies and gentlemen, don't know is that we've got into the statutes at large under 1935 under the Social Security Act. When it was created, you people were told that what it was for, that if you became disabled or you became too elderly, it was a form of income for you. Yeah. What you were not told, and it's in under Title V, Section 501, 502, the day that you were born, they put a $1.8 million value on you because of the Trading with the Enemy Act, because of the state of emergency. They made us the credit line so they could borrow not only your vehicle, but your body as collateral. This is what we're coming into with the tribunal side, because what we're showing is that whenever on that Trading with the Enemy Act, if you go back and understand it, and what they did in 1933, is that when they made Ulster Credit Line and they put a $1.8 million value the day you were born, and there is X amount of dollars, we are coming up with roughly $1 million each year, each that you live, goes into the state as federal grant money. That $1 million that the state is getting for your body is what is supposed to be discharging your debts. What this means is when you go down and you get a loan for a house, the moment you sign your name, and this is what McFadden gets into in 1933, the moment you signed your name, that mortgage was paid for at that time out of your account. When you went down and you bought a car, Visa card, you go out to eat, you sign, your meal was paid for. The state gets that $1 million to pay off your debt. What they've done by making us enemies of the corporation, because we're showing where we don't have a government now, we're dealing with the corporation is creating the war that doesn't exist, and are in order to charge you, they're bringing us in under codes and statutory violations, which is not law, rules and procedure. They're coming in, they're charging us, they're getting into our Social Security account under the Federal Reserve Act. They're investing the money, which is supposed to be paying for the war that we're supposed to be in, to supply the military. The military should not be told we don't have money for you. We are broke. We have to cut your budget whenever you are dragging the people in. All the stuff that comes out of our Social Security account, our birth account, should be going to the military for the war effort. And because it's not, we are going to jail because they are embezzling it and they're charging us because we are being held accountable for their embezzlement because they have to show where the money was misplaced.
So what you're saying, in no uncertain terms here now, is that when somebody goes into a court case, like for instance child support, that's the one that's the easiest to see where this absolute theft has taken place, because a child support enforcement, there is never any money that changes hands. Now, if you're talking about a mortgage foreclosure, or if you're talking about a student loan, money, you know, what we call money, debits and credits, whatever, has changed hands. Okay. But in a child support, you don't have any money on the table.
All right, now wait a minute. Let's go back into child support. If you go back and do a Freedom of Information Act into child support services, they have to show you where they have already collected Social Security money.
Exactly.
Already.
Yes.
But yet they're going after the dad for being a deadbeat while the child services has already been paid by the Social Security office through federal grant money.
Yes.
For them to operate, which pays the child support for the dad don't have to.
So but the mother and the children have never received one dime of that funds.
Not only did they double dip, they forced the debt on the person they were double dipping on.
They forced debtor's prison on the dads who are being charged with a crime as if they had received that money. Now, if you're in a home mortgage foreclosure, you think you have received that money. But with a child support enforcement, you have neither the parents, neither set of parents, nor neither of the children, whoever's involved, they haven't received a dime.
Okay, now, wait a minute. Let's back up here. Okay. Now, if every child born,
yes,
got $1.8 million by the federal government, and $1 million of it went to the state for that child, how are they hitting the dad up for non-payment when they've already been paid for the child to start with?
Exactly.
So now they're not only stealing the child's money, now they're tapping into the dad's side of this thing when the state's already been paid for the child, because we've got case law that shows that the state is a third party in every family member.
Yeah.
as it goes in. If you want to get married, you have to go to the state to get permission. You want divorce, you got to go to the state and get permission. You want to have children, you got to go to the state and have your child registered to the state as a bastard child
of commerce,
which is collecting the grant money for the child. So why are the dads paying child support when the state has already received the federal grant money under the Social Security Act under 1935, Chapter 5, Section 501 and 502? It's written in black ink on white paper. The state has already been paid.
And if you go in, let's just carry this one step further, because an obliger lien, which is what it's called, when you are a child support parent, non-custodial parent, they call them, that obliger lien cannot even be discharged in bankruptcy. They are saying that this person who owes this debt is so in hoc to the system that they'll go and take anything that that non-custodial parent has. They will go steal everything else from them and throw them into debtor's prison. Now, if you remember your history, debtor's prison was outlawed when we came into the country. I happen to be from Georgia. And Georgia was really, you know, it was settled under the people who came over from England out of the debtor's prisons. And they set it up so that it would never have a debtor's prison again. But any person who goes to jail because they haven't been able to pay child support is a debtor's prison situation.
But see, we've got another problem here.
Okay.
Everything you're coming up with, you got to remember here, the moment you were considered a bastard at birth, you became a ward of the state.
Oh.
And this is how they can experiment on anyone in the population at any time.
And if you are a ward of the state, then why is a dad having to pay child support to a ward, because the dad himself is a ward of the state.
Exactly.
The mom is a ward of the state. So mom and dad can't pay if they're already wards. The state already has the money for the child and the mom and the dad, and they're supposed to be discharged. See, this is where we're not making all these connections.
Okay. But now there's one more thing that I discovered, because, you know, my experience has been working with my brother who was being put in debtor's prison every time he turned around. And so I went down and I went through the exact same thing you teach everybody to do. I went down and I read every single statute and code I could figure out, because I wanted to figure out the federal funding side and how all this stuff worked. And I found out that whenever the divorce was happening and this voluntary support order that supposedly ended up with this negotiable paper that ended up in this obliger lien, well, the only way they got that was, guess what? Through that signature. It's told in that manual that the obligee, who happens to be the mother who's applying for the children or however they go in, whether it's the court case or whatever, the mother has to give the collection rights over to this agency. They cannot, they are told in no uncertain terms, that they have to get that signature, because nothing can happen until they get the signature from that mother. And then the other part of it is, here this poor, hapless, non-custodial parent has been brought into court. They sign that voluntary support order. They are told the obliger and the obligee has to sign that. Well, an obliger is a decedent estate. That is the definition of the obliger lien.
So it goes right back in. It still falls back into the state. But see, they're imposing the government side in order to obtain that money
under the Enemy Act. Yep.
And then they're embezzling it over to the corporation side. And you're going to jail because the money was embezzled and it's not going to the war effort.
And it's not going to pay off the public debt of the United States.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, it's complicated, but once you understand the basis of this, this is not just complicated.
It's really not that complicated. It's fraud. And fraud means they're playing tricks on us and scamming us, like Bernie Madoff and worse.
Yeah.
So with this tribunal, we will be able to issue writs of felony warrants to those judges that are out there. There's all sorts of things we can do. Let's talk about some of the enforcement action.
All right, the enforcement action comes in as the administrative side. And see, this is what's important here. We bring them in on a civil action. This country is set up, you have to have a civil claim before you can bring a criminal claim. Mm-hmm. Once you bring the civil claim in, and this is where the education on our side comes in. It doesn't take a private attorney general. It just takes someone who is knowledgeable enough in the laws, in their rules, in their procedure, to bring a claim against one of them.
One successful claim.
Yep. Once you bring them in, and they, and the administrator, and the tribunal judge, the international judge in this thing, if he sits down and says, okay, you proved your case, what will happen, or what should happen, is now that judge, that lawyer, that prosecutor, that public official gets removed out of office. By an administrative review.
By a constitutional bounty hunter.
Yep.
Well, that's a private attorney general that has letters of marque.
Yeah, well, doing
or by one of us. By anybody. Has done their investigative work who comes before this judge, because there's a lot of us who already have our cases. We've done the investigative work. We are ready for the tribunal to hear these cases.
The only thing what Andrew is saying is I kicked this up a notch. I did something that nobody else has ever done. I've actually successfully went before Congress. I got the letters of marquee reprisal. I'm sitting on 8 of them because I had another couple that sit back and said, how did you do this? So I walked them in to 5 congressmen and I got 5 more to show them how I walked in and did it. They said, I can't believe you just walked in here. I said, yeah, I told the congressman this is a letter of marque. I need you to sign it. They took it back. They read it. They knew they have to sign it, and they signed it and stamped them for me. So I'm sitting on letter marquee reprisals on this deal. So I have the authority, but I made it out in the name of the people when we did this. So everybody can have equal piece of this pie here to go after it.
Now, the
restrictions on this is this, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go through the administrative side. Let's go through that. We bring them in to the tribunal. We bring them in before the international judge.
And it only takes one judge. This is the thing that is very interesting as you're getting the constitutional understanding from these judges who are helping to set up the tribunal under the administrative side. It only takes one judge.
It only takes one judge
to get this started.
One case successful.
Yeah.
One judge.
One judge.
380 million people. It's already out there. Yeah.
So what we're looking at is this. Yeah. The simplicity is that we go in, we take out the one judge. Yeah. Once they're found guilty, they get pulled off. All their assets gets frozen, just like a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Everything gets frozen. All right. Once they are investigated, then it should go to a proper grand jury. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to a tribunal of judges, which is 3. And again, one of us, private attorney general, this is where the private attorney general comes in.
As the prosecutor.
As the prosecutor, prosecutor on this, not one of theirs, one of us comes in.
Not a lawyer, but the private attorney general who understands the laws and the rules.
Once we win the case, everything that they have, 2/3 goes back to pay the tax, the bounty, to the government for misuse of federal funding. There is a 1/3 whistleblower's fee. So what this means is these judges that may have 3 or 4 houses, about $4, $5, $6 million, and got a yacht, and has got all these condominiums, has got offshore accounts, all this stuff gets confiscated.
And a retirement fund that has a 15% of every bond of every case that has ever smacked the gavel on, which could be 50,000 cases by the end of his career.
Every one of this gets confiscated. It now goes in and pays the public debt down. Because, see, this is what you people are missing here. Because when they are dragging us in, mm-hmm, as enemies of the state, and they're tapping into our account, that money is to be zeroed out on the public debt side of this thing.
And that 2/3 will go to pay off the public debt, which screws up the 2 books.
But the point he's making here is the public debt has not been ledgered. When you're talking about the debits and the credits here, and you've got your you know, your double entry bookkeeping. Well, if they're stealing it and not admitting that they're stealing, see, it's an obligation. Let's go back to this obliger lien that we're talking about. That is an obligation of the United States government because they're supposed to be paying for these children.
Exactly right. This falls back under that 1913 Federal Reserve Act, Section 16. It's also under Title 12 of the banking laws, 411, that goes in and shows that the Federal Reserve is only for the banking system and for the Federal Reserve agent only, and it is the obligation of the United States.
So if they're not paying,
people,
if they're not paying the obligation of the United States, like this obliger lien, that's against this non-custodial parent, if they're stealing these funds and then coming back in and charging this poor hapless person, throwing them in debtor's prison, that means that they're not only stealing from the family, they're stealing from the United States government, because that's why our public debt is as large as it is, because they're not zeroing out these debits and credits to the degree that they're supposed to. It should be zeroed out. The public debt has been settled. So that's something that people really, you know, if we have these horrendous numbers with the public debt, well, that's all smoke and mirrors, because somebody is stealing from the people every time they access these accounts and don't pay off the public debt and discharge that debt like they're supposed to.
And the tribunal can begin to reveal the two sets of books, because if a judge shows up and he says, I want an attorney, the attorney will be charged also in that, correct?
Exactly.
So what is that judge going to say? Is he going to use his non-disclosure agreement there? No, he's not. Who issued that non-disclosure agreement? An agent. And I'm going to make a statement to every single person out there that has ever been given a non-disclosure agreement that they've signed, whether you're in the bank industry, you're in government, private, or you're in the military, it was signed under what?
Duress.
Duress.
Under threat. Under intimidation.
In front of a tribunal, absolutely nothing can happen to you about your non-disclosure agreements. So I'm now talking to more people out there who are whistleblowers, who are so deathly afraid of a piece of paper that says they will go to jail. Your non-disclosure agreements are paper with ink. They have no power.
It was done under coercion, because when they made you sign it, they knew that they were going to violate the law to start with and violate the people's rights and put you in a jeopardy of criminal activity on your side of defense.
You hear that? There are four-star generals, one-star generals, and full-bird colonels who can come and sit on this tribunal as a provost marshal and say to every single one that's in their command, if you are afraid of your non-disclosure agreement, listen to this show.
Now, the thing of it is, you military personnel, you generals, five-star, three-star, admirals, you got to remember something here. General Order 100 has never been repealed.
Remember, General Order 100 has never been repealed.
General Order is the Lieber Code. Because we're under the Lieber Code is rules of engagement on the military dealing with civilian personnel and the United States only. It does not cover any other country. That's what you get the Geneva Convention for. It is strictly here. So what you get into and you start understanding, and we're going to get into this weekend, because it shows that we're under the military districts. And when we became under the military district in 1861, we became under the administrative side of the government, under the military side of this thing. So we're actually operating under administration since 1861. Because the Lieber Code says we are. Mm-hmm. So what this means is, as military personnel, as generals, you have the authority to walk into any of these civilian courts that's flying that little gold eagle with the trim of gold and has the spike on it on the state side of this thing. And for those of you who don't understand, do yourself a favor. Get into your Army Regulations 840-10. Go down to 8.1 to 8.2. read the little symbols, mm-hmm. and read what it says, that these are military courts, administrative, and ladies and gentlemen, on the military side, on the militia side, on the adjutant general side, especially the adjutant general for the state that works for the governors, you people are in charge of protecting the citizens in this country. You are in charge of the militia in this country.
And under the Dick Act.
I remind you of the 1902 Dick Act. There's three forms of militia. You've got the military militia, you've got the National Guard for the state, and you have the unorganized militia. And the National Guard is never going to leave this country's borders. And the unorganized is we the people. You have the authority to use we the people, and you're supposed to be supporting us, because if you go back and check your history of the militia, the militia's main project was to keep law and order on the public office side in this country. That was the original intent of the militia. Mm-hmm. That has never changed, because we went, but because we went to the corporation, the Bar Association is now telling you what you can do, what you cannot do. You need to go back in and get into the military manual, the TM 2000-25 of the Citizens Manual of 1925. It will tell you what your job is as military personnel. It will explain to you the difference between a republic form of government and a democracy. And a democracy comes into mobocracy, which is mob rule, which is what we're dealing with. And under republic, as the military personnel, you have the authority to come back in and straighten this thing out. Now, you guys are worried about, well, Rod, we're being paid through the Treasury. Excuse me. You were given, especially the Navy was given by Abraham Lincoln, the Treasury outfit of this country. Mm-hmm. It was given to the Navy to take offshore. You, as military, have the authority over all the mining districts, over all the oil districts, over all the natural resources district. You have an income. It isn't Federal Reserve notes.
It's resource-backed.
The military can pull this thing back into the national cash side of this thing.
Resource-backed, not fiat.
Yep.
That is so key to any of the retired military that are listening to the show, or to the live military that we've talked about that's listening in South Africa currently. You guys have an opportunity to listen to this stuff and to honestly say, are you ready to stand up on the Republic side, or are you going to keep your corporate oath?
Because what you guys don't realize, also under that Sailor Soldier Relief Act, that's never been repealed either that I have found. When we get discharged, we're supposed to be giving our wages in gold after discharge. And we were supposed to be given acreage for our services and time in the military. And that has never been done.
That's correct. That's why there's so much public lands, that is, all the resources are going to something like the oil line that's coming out of Canada. That's why they're stealing the natural resources. So if the military people ever stood up, there'd be nothing left for them.
That's exactly right.
And so basically what goes on here, as we're doing these shows, the purpose of these shows is entertainment. You know, we want you to get in here and educate yourself. And instead of watching TV, which is the common way that everybody entertains themselves, here's the opportunity to sit down in front of this and learn all of these things. Because if you educate yourself, what are you doing? You're empowering yourself to be able to do something about this. If we don't do the educational say ourselves, if we don't understand this, then how on earth are we going to empower ourselves to do anything about it? So what we're doing this weekend and what we're doing with New Earth Nation and the Tribunal, we're setting up ways that we can begin to empower ourselves to hold these officials accountable. We don't have to start at the top of the Illuminati chain. You know, most mm-hmm. of us say all these words and really have a very basic understanding of what we're talking about.
Start at your traffic court.
Yeah, start with traffic court. You know,
that's
Yeah, that's where we're getting railroaded here.
That's why you have 97% of the course cases in favor of the prosecution because of so many traffic courts.
That's where your human trafficking starts because this is what we're saying.
That's exactly what we're talking about here. Let's get that picture. Yes.
Do the administrative side prove the corruption on the lower court? Once we prove it, we have now proved human trafficking in this country. We have now proved human crimes in this country. We have now proven war crimes in this country because we started on the administrative. We showed that they're not following the rules. They're not following the regulations. They're not following anything on their side. They can't give you jurisdiction. They can't give you straight answers. And once we bring men to the tribunal, if they can't give straight answers, they automatically get pulled off. We do the investigation, how many people they have railroaded in their courts, how many of their people have been sold out on the stock market that used to show up on Dun & Bradstreet, because when we had court cases, we'd go in and see our name on Dun & Bradstreet. We were being traded as on every court case.
And we still are.
We still are. But what they've done is because we've exposed this, now they have shut down Dun & Bradstreet. You've got to now be a member, and you've got to have the precise code to get into that precise case. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, if we had a case, we'd go to Dun & Bradstreet. We'd see our name on Dun & Bradstreet, traded us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so you get this proof, and what's happening is, as I've been talking to the people who came in early for this conference that we're doing this weekend, every single one of those people that I've talked to so far has done the investigative work. They've gotten in there and they are empowering themselves by learning what Rod and the others of us who are really working together to teach everybody a lot of this. They have done their investigative side. They are ready for these cases to go before the tribunal. And so more and more of us need to be doing as whatever's yours to do. You know, that's the power of the moment that we're always talking about. Because when you get a traffic ticket, when you're dealing with a child support issue, when you're dealing with foreclosure, guess what? That is in your face because it's yours to deal with. You can't run away from it. You can't push it off on somebody else. And if you leave it with a lawyer, you're going to lose. That's just the way it works. So as you begin to work on these issues yourself, you begin to take back your own power and learn that guess who is the most important equation in this whole thing? It's we the people getting to the place of knowledge, getting to the place of empowering ourselves and saying, you know what? This is our country. We want peace and prosperity here.
For our seven future generations.
Yes, and it's up to us to do this.
But what we're going to get into tonight, a lot of you people think, well, this just started here.
No.
We're going to get back and we're going to show you in 1913, Edward Mendelhaus, which helped get Woodrow Wilson into office.
Yeah.
He is the one that helped get the Federal Reserve System set into
place. Under the table so that it didn't get paid attention to.
In 1913, he made a famous speech that went out and basically made the issue is that the people will never know whatever happened to them. They will just go along with it. And then when they finally find out, it will be plausible deniability. This was in 1913. We're in 2014 now. 101 years later, they started this 100 years ago. This was not something that was set up within the last 6 weeks, within the last 5 years, within the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. They set this up in 1913, and actually they set it up before then, but 1913 is when the Federal Reserve came in. They knew then they was going to steal the people's property. Mm-hmm. They was going to steal your credit. They was going to steal your livelihood.
Before
World War I was in full effect, before the Spanish influenza, before mass genocide on all of those areas where a mass population was depopulated on purpose, on purpose, so that when that war ended, there would be a big boom and a big crash so they could set you up for part two of the war. And when that war ended, what did they do? The Marshall Plan.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is something that you got to sit back and say, okay, well, this is something relative. This has been pre-planned for hundreds of years.
Yes.
And this is what this seminar is about, is to walk you through the historical record side, to sit back and show you how and when this stuff came out in congressional records. And this is why it's so important for the military side to understand what is going on, because when you guys are coming home, you guys are facing the same problem as what the rest of us is facing. The thing of it is, they are stripping you guys of your VA plan. They are stripping you of your Second Amendment right. They are stripping you of all your rights because you are now a threat. You are now a risk coming home because of your knowledge that you can start taking down the system and supporting the militia group. So now you are profiled under PTS, post-traumatic stress. So now they got you under a psychological that you are mentally incapable and mentally unfit to come back home to deal with the system. So they've taken away your Second Amendment right in this country.
You hear that, guys? You're going to act now?
This is what, ladies and gentlemen, this is, like I said, the history is here. You talk to the veterans that's coming home.
Mm-hmm.
They are not happy with what has happened here. They don't know why. They don't know how come. That's why we're broadcasting this out. That's why we're letting you know. This is what this radio show is about. This is what AIB Radio about on TalkShoe.com. If you get into my ID number, which is 48361, or look up Rod, R-O-D, Class, C-L-A-S-S, Rod Class on the internet, you will pull a lot of information of what we're doing and tie you into my TalkShoe show, because we're on the internet. I am going overseas. I've got guys in Afghanistan that's listening. I'm getting some donations from Afghanistan because these guys are aware of what's happening. Guys, you are not working for a government. You're working for a private corporation that is infiltrating and stealing. And a lot of you guys are aware in some of these countries that you're in that our country is embezzling the natural resources of these countries, and they're using you to cover it up.
You're the pirates.
Yes.
Yes. And so in this whole situation, what we're talking about here is knowledge is power. Now, if you go back and you read the statement that House had to say in 1913, they never expected the people to be smart enough to figure out any of this. They thought that we were just such dumb sheeple that we would never, ever, ever get down to the point where we can actually explain how we are being utilized as their credit line, as their collateral, as they're just pure old slaves. Let's call it what it is. And so as we begin to get this knowledge, then the knowledge of standing up for ourselves in our court cases or standing up in whatever way is ours to do, we look at it and say, okay, we want a better world. We want something that we're proud of to be called in our home or whatever. Well, how are we going to get that? You know, it's up to us to get the knowledge and to empower ourselves, because we're a whole lot smarter than we think we are. And as we work together, because what is happening as we're working with these broadcasts and we're working within so many different groups here, we're all coming together and we're learning how to pull ourselves in from every divide that they've tried to put us from, so that we're learning to help each other. The foreclosure network out here is just absolutely phenomenal to watch how people have reached out, how Rod Class has shared his paperwork, never charged a dime for this, anytime, as he's given it away and given it away. Come before AIB Radio to teach all of us, and never ask for anything more than donations to help him deal with the court cases and things that he's done in order to get this knowledge, in order to be able to share it. So that's a big part of this thing, is all of us networking together and learning how to take our country where we want it to go, because the future's ours.
It is the human stories out there
Yes.
that will populate the evidence of all of these tribunals. Yes. from Kevin Annette's court case to any of the ones that are spread around or the common law courts. It is those stories. So I implore those people out there to pick up a webcam or a cell phone cam. If you've been taken by mortgage fraud, if you've been taken by bail bondsmen, if you've been taken by anyone and scammed, make a self video, because that is the beginning of your evidence, your story, your heart space, your tears, your time in jail, your time tortured, your time as that human being, as the I am presence, not your corporate straw man. We want your story, because in your stories is such a powerful truth that will reach and reach and reach and help people wake up and realize that the men in costumes are costumes, and we have given them their power, and they have taken it and taken it. And when we are asked to be shown our ID, we don't have to, unless they have what?
Valid oath of office. They've got a bond, and they actually hold a real government position on this. But ladies and gentlemen, something else I want to add in to you, because what Becca was saying here. Nobody can afford to buy my paperwork. And the reason why is this, of the veterans. Mm-hmm. The veterans paid the ultimate price. You guys overseas is paying the ultimate price for my paperwork. As a veteran myself, I have a very serious attitude problem of being told to go overseas, die for somebody else's freedom, fight for somebody else's freedom, and come home, walk into these courts, and the judge says the Constitution is nothing more than a GD piece of paper and doesn't have no authority, no force and effect in my court. Your statutes don't have any force and effect in my court. This is my court. This man is nothing more than a warlord. He's what you're fighting overseas.
And that made your blood boil.
Yes, it did.
And on top of that, the thing that makes my blood boil is to know I lost my brother. He was my brother cousin. He lived with us for all of his teenage years. I lost my brother in Vietnam. So this is something that comes from my heart space when I'm dealing with this, because I see so many veterans who are homeless. I see too many of them who have been left out on the streets by this corporation that promised to take care of them. And there is no help. You know, the problems that we face with the veterans who have come back, that they don't have the help and support they need for doing all of these things. So let's get real. Let's tell the truth about what's really going on here and make sure that we have the help and stuff that they need rather than just ignoring it.
For all you guys out there who aren't ready to pick up a book and aren't ready to study, what you can do is share this radio show.
Yes.
What you can do is email it. What you can do is maybe walk into a court and look at that flag there and go, what did Rod say? Maybe I'll go to an Army-Navy store and pick up a book of military codes. Exactly. Maybe you will do something other than watch television and reality TV.
Yeah, because it only takes one step. And when you start, you sort of get pulled into this, just like Rod. When you really hear his story of how he got pulled into this, or you hear my story, or Andrew's story, or any of us who are doing this work, you will find that we have a heart story that has pulled us into this job that we have volunteered for, that we're giving our time and our efforts to help you get the understanding so that we can help empower you and be able to do this so that we together can do what needs to be done here.
You're sitting back and you're saying, but I am one person.
Yes.
Edward Mendelhaus was one person that changed the system.
That's right.
He was one person that changed the system.
Yeah.
Because he was able to convince, buy, pay off, extort, swindle to get what he wanted. He was one person that put us in the position that we're at right now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
One person.
And one person can go back in and educate. That's what we're doing here. Educating and bringing the truth out. And it takes one person to start the process And it takes the rest of you to jump on board like Wilson did and all of these other people who helped Edward Mendelhaus to deceive the people. But it took one person to start it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing. We're one person that's starting this to get a snowball rolling.
That's right. Yeah. Not a Snowden rolling, a snowball.
That's right.
And a spitball. A spitball is coming your way. We'll tell you more about this as we get started, but we got Operation Spitball in the works here. Spitwad. Well, I call it a spitball.
Call us paper terrorists.
In my community, it was a spitball. So whatever you call it, whether it's a spitwad or a spitball, we got some of those coming your way. So we do have plans, and we are putting together. I mean, you know, what happens when all of us get together? Oh, the ideas do flow, don't they?
Absolutely. So, Rob, we're at the end. Any last words?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's like I should have said, if I could have all the people that says I am by myself, I could fill every stadium in this country, whether it be NASCAR, whether it be football, whether it be basketball, and you can all look around and you're going to see that you're not one person.
That's right.
You're millions.
And the story that I'm going to end with is the story you always tell about the 80,000 people that it took to stop Prohibition. 80,000 people filing their paperwork, filing against Prohibition in the courts. Only 80,000 people took down and got Prohibition repealed in this country. 80,000 people. You know, that's just
before the internet.
A small number, way before the internet.
Way.
There weren't even telephones worldwide.
Yeah.
So.
Let alone indoor plumbing and air conditioning.
Yes. And the place to send your stories is to Rebecca@Humanitad.org. Rebecca at Humanitad. humanitad.org. I love to have the stories. We read every one. We'll post every single one that we possibly can. As we get this major effort going, we want your participation. That's the first step. We welcome you to do that.
Well, we are nearing the end of a show. This is the beginning of an incredible event. I want to thank Rebecca and Rod. Rod, you want to give out your TalkShoe information again and how to get a hold of the documents? Because there are some people out there, particularly those guys in SEAL Team 34 that are still in South Africa. Yeah, I'm mentioning you guys again because you are the ones that can step forth and be a part of a provost marshal group or be a part of the enforcement action group that will actually protect this man sitting right next to me when they decide to do what? Pull people off the bench and bring them to the tribunal so he doesn't get shot. And that's the truth. Each and every one of you are facing in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in South Africa, or anywhere else in the universe you're deployed.
My TalkShoe is TalkShoe.com. My ID number is 48361. Get into a Friday night call. The reason why I'm saying Friday night is when I do the live calls, Harvey will give you the big list. I think what is what?
Ray Dash.
No, it's what? It's Rod.
Oh, Rod at ray-servers.com.
But get into the show. Harvey will walk you through it. I'll show you how to get on the big list. And all my documentation is posted on the big list for free, along with the docket sheets in the federal court in D.C., showing all the screw-ups that they're doing on D.C. because I have went through three federal judges, three federal prosecutors, three public defenders. I'm starting to feel like a pair of partridge in a pear tree with these people because I'm the only original person in this. The thing of it is, guys,
what a partridge would be a more fair, partial judge for you than like what we got now.
But what we're doing is we're walking in and we are exposing their entire corruption. We're exposing their fraud. They're not following any rules. They're not following any regulations. And we're handing them their books. And it's upsetting them because we're reading their books. So, guys, I get into my TalkShoe show. Look up Rod Class, R-O-D-C-L-A-S-S, up on the internet, and you'll find me. of what we're doing, and look on YouTube. I'm all over YouTube of what we're exposing. Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, we are recording this seminar. We will have that available for sale, so that if you get ready to do these processes and you want your hand to be held more, we will have that available too. So we're doing everything we can to help not only just give you so much of this information, but have those techniques and tools available that make it easy for you to get in there and follow your own path to make a difference in as far as what you're doing to start empowering yourself, because, hey, that's where it is. It's up to us.
All right, everyone. This has been a really incredible show, and I just want to make a statement out there. Operation Spitwad is a green light. Thank you very much, everyone.
All right. Good night.